Welcome everyone to another episode of Cyber Coast to Coast. This is Craig Schober coming at you from the West Coast here in Costa Rica. And I'm joined as always by my brother Scott. Hey Scott, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going there, Craig? And I'm over here, East Coast, out of our headquarters, Metuchen, New Jersey, right outside of New York City.
All right, very well. We've got three good stories lined up and some additional things on air tags, as you'll probably have seen in the headlines. every headline, seems like. But first, before we get into anything, just want to mention that this episode is sponsored by Dark Kryptonite. Dark Kryptonite stops ransomware, malware, and phishing attacks in their tracks, virtually eliminating cybercrime, fraud, and information warfare. They utilize advanced blockchain algorithms and zero trust models, and you can learn a lot more about all that stuff on darkkryptonite.com. Kryptonite with a C, like as in crypto. Want to do a quick rundown, I guess, on this week. I usually go through and look, and I didn't find any big stories per se. You know, usually there's a big one or two, like a huge hack or breach or something's, you know, that gets kind of national attention. I didn't necessarily see that this week, but I do see three interesting ones nonetheless, and I'm sure you'll our regular listeners will recognize some of the names and the players and the technologies in all of these stories. So, and that's part of the reason why I think they drew my attention. So hopefully they'll draw others' attention and they'll get something from it. A quick rundown. We've got a Bleep and Computer story, ransomware gang, and a double extortion. I guess we'll get into more about that. What exactly is double extortion and the numbers involved with this particular attack. We got, again, ChatGPT still in the news. Got some stolen credentials on these dark web marketplaces. They're being sold. And we'll talk more about that and the repercussions of something like that. Finally, we got another story from Security Week involving TSMC and more ransomware, of course. But this is a chip giant. They make chips for everything from iPhone to Samsung to just about any consumer electronic device you could think of. So what happens when they get, or their vendor gets hacked? We'll talk more about that. But before we dive into the first story, want to do a quick little—I don't know—we call it kind of a almost like a recap or a retelling of the AirTag saga. as some of you, just a quick backup, as some of you might know, we make technology that detects AirTags. And you know, we work with law enforcement and even consumers more and more on this because it is a consumer device. So this, any AirTag story catches our attention, and I think it's catching everyone else's attention because it seems like every week there's a new angle, a new way to steal with AirTags, a new way to get stalked or hacked or whatever. This story, more rarely seen, is actually a positive story on AirTags. As you know, you can put an AirTag in just about any device and use it to track thieves, or at least find where your stolen device is at that moment. Now, you're not supposed to go and confront these people, these thieves, yourself. You're supposed to contact law enforcement, but sometimes people are impatient or they're just too angry to think it through. So they go and confront them and stuff happens. You know, I think there was a woman who confronted a thief just a few weeks ago for, I think it was a stolen vehicle, and she was killed. So this stuff is, you know, this is serious stuff. But in this particular case, this story, I found this link on Fox News, but again, you could probably find it on just about any news organization because these things tend to make national headlines whenever they hit. And this is a Texas family that tracked down, I guess, grave robbers who were stealing these expensive vases from a nearby funeral home. I didn't realize this. Some of these vases, the average price gets up to about $600 a vase. And when you have an organized crime, theft of these, they're stealing dozens or even hundreds of these, and that adds up to, in this case, it was $62,000 was retrieved after the police were involved and they caught the grave robbers. I don't know. What do you make of this, Scott, this kind of thing? Do you think we're going to see more positive stories about this stolen property retrieval, or is it just going to go back to the stalking stories that we're more used to?
I guess probably a combination of both. It is nice to see, and I'm glad you picked this one, because it's nice to see something positive for a change. Because I feel like, I mean, lately I've been barraged with a lot of people that, in fact, I had an individual that came by here twice just this week alone to our headquarters, and we don't really sell to the general public. And he was from another country. He was on asylum. He was being tracked by GPS trackers. When he was in one country, he feels like he's being tracked here in the United States. And he's in fear, and he needed a sweep done to his vehicle. And he was concerned about traditional GPS trackers, but also the tag trackers. And of course, we make tools and such for this. And it was interesting to hear how often these things seem to be happening. And I read a lot of stories about people, because I'm on a lot of different LinkedIn groups and Facebook groups about stalking and tracking and how people are looking for solutions, like some of the tools that we make, like our Blue Sleuth Light, to detect air tags and things of that sort, because it's become such a problem. But this story is interesting. I like the fact that the tag is being used for good. I guess criminals here in this case know that these vases, or I guess you call them a vase when it's above $500, I guess is the way it works, certainly. Right. They've got a market in selling stolen vases because people are overpaying to get these things at grave sites. And I think it's sad because they're trying to capitalize on people's loss and sadness when you're distracted. And you really can't keep focus and you can't worry about it. And I'm guessing not many of these people have the time or the wherewithal to work with police and write up an investigation, this and that, because they just lost a loved one. In this case, I guess it was an uncle. In this case, as I'm reading through the story here, that passed, and his gravesite is where they stole the vase. And it's really sad and heartbreaking that people do that. But it's nice to see the positive side. The fact that an AirTag could be put on something that has value to somebody, be it, monetary value, or even just maybe emotional or some significance they can associate, they can track down the bad guys and arrest them. And that makes me feel good. And I encourage people, if you have something of value, put it on, not just your luggage or your suitcase, which reminds me, I'm going to be going on a trip soon. I'm going to start putting some fresh tags on my luggage, so if something happens, at least I could track them and follow them, which I think is important.
Yeah, good idea too. One of the things that caught my attention at this story was the fact that it was grave robbers, and I immediately thought, like, oh, are they, just literal robbing of graves? And then I started to think, wow, are people going to be putting air tags somewhere around the corpse, or because a lot of people are buried with jewelry or certain, precious items or something. Mm-hmm. And some of those items have value. I wonder if air tags are going to be now buried with those items in a casket, waiting for thieves, to steal them. I suppose that anything's possible.
Well, definitely.
So I guess we'll wait to hear that story.
Yeah. I'll share a story. It kind of parallels. It's not exactly about grave robbers or anything else, but it opened my eyes to something. I was testing our little Blue Sleuth Lite. It's just a low cost scanner to find tags. And I started walking around toward the woods outside of our building the other day. I wanted to find an area where there was no Bluetooth low energy or no tags picked up. And I found it way in the back by the woods. And we're right on a kind of a endangered bird sanctuary swamp behind our building. It's really beautiful, but there was no wireless activity. And as I started walking back from the woods in the parking lot, I'm looking down at my unit. All of a sudden, boom, a tag popped up, a detection of a tag. And I started walking around and I walked toward a vehicle of one of our machinists. And I said, oh, it's telling me there's an air tag in his vehicle. I said, let me go inside and go see. So I walked up to the machine and said, hey, can I ask you a question? I said, do you have an air tag in your vehicle? He kind of laughed. He goes, yeah, how'd you know? And I said, oh, I had a Blue Sleuth Lite. I happened to walk by your vehicle. I detected it. And as I got closer, I saw the signal strength intensity pickup. I said, it's just wonderful to see the product works great. And then as I'm standing there talking to him, it vibrates in my hand. I glance down, I look, and it says, a tile is detected. And I said, oh, that's weird. I said, in our machine shop, I said, I just detected a tile. I said, do you have any tiles around here? He goes, that's funny. He goes, I just bought a brand new card, a tile card that's in my wallet. He goes, funny you saw that. I just literally put it in there the day before. And I started laughing again. I had another aha moment. And I says, wow, this really does work well. Without looking for it, it alerted me just holding it in my hand to two tags. And again, not that anybody was doing anything wrong or whatever else, it just showed me how effective and how useful the world's simplest tool is at detecting tags that are in spots that you just did not even know. And that's cool. And I'm kind of looking forward to more stories and hearing from customers as they kind of locate and find tags.
Yeah, it's always great to hear, you know, especially when you're, whether you're testing the unit, doing, you know, a Q&A or a QA type of thing right before it goes out the door, you know, these stories are going to keep coming. And now we're part of the story, you know, because we're sort of yes. in that little ecosystem of tags and trackers and stalking and all those things that go with it. So I expect to see a lot of great customer testimonials coming our way.
Oh, definitely. In fact, it makes me think maybe we should have a little contest for, you know, the month's best story or something. And we'll, I don't know, send them a little gift or a thank you note for sharing your success stories using our tools. Because I love to hear feedback from customers when they share, hey, I used your tool for this and it helped me do something or improve my life or made me feel safer or made a difference. And we've talked a lot about our stories in the past where our tools have literally saved people's lives, where they've helped them locate lost items and things that they couldn't find. And it's nice to be part of a success story for a change where technology is used for good. And I always commend that.
All right, let's get on. Let's move on to the first story. But first, a quick reminder that this episode is sponsored by Dark Kryptonite. Stops ransomware, malware, and phishing in their tracks, limiting cybercrime, fraud, and information warfare. And Dark Kryptonite uses advanced blockchain algorithms and zero-trust models. And learn all that and more on darkkryptonite.com. A quick word about sponsors. We are currently looking for new sponsors. If you hear the show and you think it's a fit for your audience, your customers, then we'll be happy to talk to you and see if we can work out anything. Always happy to spread the word about good sponsors, good products, and good cybersecurity solutions. And of course, this, you know, expands to our email newsletter and our website, and, you know, we could even create videos. So we're open to your suggestions. So contact us at the address for this podcast, the email address, and we'll get right back to you and see what we can work out. What's this? The first story, we've got the headline, 8Base. This is a ransomware gang. Apparently, 8Base ransomware gang escalates double extortion attacks in June. And I saw this one on bleepingcomputer.com. And first thing I thought was double extortion. What's that exactly? I think I have an idea, but I'll let the expert Scott explain that. But I guess one of the things that jumped out at me on this particular story was the attack from this gang are kind of being tracked and posted, and there's been a steady stream of them, but you know, they're in the low single digits, and suddenly there was a huge spike in the beginning of June. I guess they were kind of sitting on a bunch of phishing attacks they had going out, and they had these exploits they collected and sort of took advantage of them all at once, maybe, and that's why you saw this sudden spike in reports of ransomware and this kind of thing. But I just thought it was the one of the funny things I noticed was on their actual page. You know, again, this is an illegal ransomware gang, but yet they have a public presence on a public forum of sorts. They have a Twitter presence. They have their own website, and they're in other areas too. And one of their quotes was, "We are honest and simple pen testers. We offer companies the most loyal conditions for the return of their data." You know, just the way it's written is the, you know, usual kind of English as a second or third language, kind of that sort of approach. But just the fact that they try to position themselves as pen testers, you know, like we're white hat, we're not even gray hat, much less black hat. You know, it's a complete opposite of what's going on. I don't know. How do you find this kind of
positioning? I think it's kind of funny, because I call somebody that does true pen testing somebody that has some advanced skills. They're not a newbie. They don't have. It's not a simple job, as they kind of associate with simple. And just the fact, the way they kind of spelled this out in the sentence, it's almost like they're making a defense or asking you to, like, you know, bleeping computer readers to sign it, kind of sympathize and say, because they've mentioned here, the list contains only those companies that have neglected the privacy and importance of the data of their employees and customers. So it's kind of like a little bit of a Robin Hood mentality. Hey, we're only going after this unique group because they were negligent in keeping their companies or their employees' data safe and private, and the customers' data. So it's kind of justification for what they're doing. Hey, we're bad, but we're not really that bad because we're doing good. It is kind of spooky. The other thing, to your point, extortion, extortion is just what you think it is. And in the sense of a ransomware attack, typically what will happen is a cyber criminal gang such as this one, 8Base, will go in, they'll hack into the company's network. And before they do anything else, they'll exfiltrate all the data that they can. They copy down oodles and oodles and terabytes of all the data, not even knowing what's valuable and what's not. Once they have that, they keep that and store that on the side. That's to be used later, often, if a company refuses to pay the ransomware. So a company may say, hey, we're not going to pay you the $1 million or whatever it is that you're trying to extort out of us. And then the company, the bad guys, the cyber criminals say, okay, fine. Now we're going to go public, and we're going to take all this data that we exfiltrated, and we're going to make it public. We're going to embarrass and shame you. And now it's out in the Wild West, and anybody could see who your customers are and the confidential information, your IP, whatever you're trying to store on your network. And that's kind of like a double whammy. So extortion is usually used as leverage when ransomware demands are not met. And perhaps this group could be a little bit inexperienced, 8Base. And of course, as I say that, you know what that means. They're probably going to be targeting us as a company, because they usually do that when you call out somebody or question any of these ransomware gangs. They like to go after people and send them messages. So in the weeks to come, we'll see what happens there. But that double extortion can be very painful. I thought the funny thing is, this is an inexperienced group. Why? Well, they've only been in business for a little more than a year. The sheer number of attacks that are reported is not that high, although we've seen a recent spike. So I'm guessing you know, into the second quarter this year, they found a successful formula that works for them. And maybe it's that added component of double extortion that they said, hey, wow, if we do a ransomware attack, we're not getting the money we thought. But if we do the double extortion, we'll get a lot more respect and get the money quicker, faster, and a higher payout. And they're having some success. And that's why it probably took off. That's just my guess. I'm speculating. But the fact they announced so many victims in such a short period of time, 35 victims, is kind of interesting. And I also wanted to get your take. Using the dark web as a form to kind of publish victims and what you got, and they're kind of using it like success stories. I mean, we have testimonials from customers when they say, hey, Berkley, we love your products. You helped us do this or that. And we appreciate that, the feedback you get. It's almost like they're using the dark web as an opportunity to kind of brag and show how successful they are at performing these ransomware attacks, double extortion. What do you think?
Oh, well, it's exactly that. And I think they're using the dark web to kind of, like you said, they're kind of launching. These guys are new, but in the further down the story, it reads there's a more well-established group called Ransom House and VMware Carbon Black team, who, you know, publishes reports about these. They follow the, you know, tactics and all the, you know, antics and criminal activity from the all of these types of groups. They suspect that this 8Base is kind of a new bunch of, you know, guys, hackers, but they're kind of an offshoot from this better established Random House. And it does mirror things that you see in the, you know, legitimate business industry. You have sometimes you have these employees from big companies either getting poached or announcing that they're leaving this company and they're doing a startup, you know, and they do this by making some big hay about a new technology or a new news item, or they start some controversy in the news to get everyone to say, hey, look over here, look at us, we're doing stuff too, because they're, you know, they're new and they want to get their name out there and they want to establish themselves. And this kind of sounds like a form of that. They're just jumping, you know, who knows, maybe they were let's pretend and you know, write a quick little story, you know, these were disgruntled Random House hackers that had access to some of these breaches, some of this data. So maybe they walked away with a few things and said, we're going to start our own little hacker contingency because we don't like the way that you guys are dispersing the payments, or we don't like the employee contract or whatever they do over there. So, you know, they walked away and right away they have a kind of a head start because they have all this data. You know, I mean, this is me just supposing, but I don't see why it couldn't be a possibility, you know, that kind of stuff. So it just shows how these criminal organizations, they are mirroring the business world, the legitimate world more and more. And it makes you wonder if in the future, will they be perceived somehow as legitimate? I guess time will tell. Hopefully it never gets to that point. But, you know, and enough of these things happen and it's accepted as the price of doing business. Who knows? Maybe someday they will be considered legitimate by the average, you know, Joe Public.
Yeah. Very interesting. That's for sure.
Right. Let's move on to our next story. Once again, though, I want to remind listeners about Dark Kryptonite, our sponsor this week. You can visit darkkryptonite.com. Kryptonite is a C, as in, you know, crypto, and learn more about ransomware, malware, phishing, and how they're preventing these types of things. These are the stories we talk about every week. Dark Kryptonite has what they believe a handle on this, a new paradigm for security. It's exciting. We've personally gotten some kind of hands-on demos More on that in the future. We'll hopefully give our audience a sneak peek on that kind of stuff. But in the meantime, get all the information on Dark Kryptonite on their website, darkkryptonite.com. Okay. Next story comes from Hacker News. And this one is over 100,000 stolen ChatGPT account credentials are being sold on dark web marketplaces. So again, here we have the dark web marketplace doing its thing, and we're kind of peering into it to see just what happened this time. And it appears, what do we got? 101,100 compromised account credentials. Now, just to be clear, this isn't open source ChatGPT. What are they? OpenAI, right? OpenAI runs ChatGPT. You know, OpenAI hasn't been breached in any way. These are individual user accounts for either bad password management or what have you. Individuals have been their account user accounts have been compromised, and now they're being offered up for sale. And I thought the breakdown was kind of interesting. The most accounts in this particular batch were from India, over 12,000 stolen credentials from there. And then you got other Pakistan, Brazil, Vietnam, Egypt, France, Morocco, Indonesia, Bangladesh, and of course the US is in there too, with various accounts, credentials being stolen, being traded, sold. You know, this type of thing, you know, I have a ChatGPT account. I believe you do, right? Even dad,
yep, I do too.
You know, our father does. He started a ChatGPT for him. It makes sense. You want to, it's the kind of account, it's not like a Netflix account. Well, I guess you used to be able to share passwords easier. I think they clamped down on that recently, but you know, you used to be able to share passwords with people you trust for streaming accounts and things like that. But there's no good reason to share an account on with a ChatGPT, because one of the whole points of it is that it kind of, not only does it store all your queries and your questions and answers and things you get back from ChatGPT, but it supposedly is learning about your needs and what you want. So it's a personalized sort of playlist, if you will, of all your ChatGPT interactions. So you wouldn't share that here. So you're going to have your individual, you know, your user account, you're going to create that. But it makes you wonder what the value of this is. Of course, there's password reuse and things like that, and there's always value there. So if they have the password for your ChatGPT, they might have the password for your Facebook, for instance. But I think it goes further than that, because a lot of these things, if you can connect the user to a company or a government agency or a person of importance, suddenly now you have insight into things that they're looking at, things that questions they're asking. It's kind of like getting someone's browser history in a way, but even more advanced than that, because you don't just have something they were looking for. You now have the answer that they were presented by ChatGPT, and you can now, you know, it makes me think, I wonder if, let's say a politician gives a speech and their ChatGPT account has been breached. Now you now know what part of the speech was written by AI and what part was just written by their, you know, speech writer or something, which doesn't sound to be too important. But, you know, I could imagine a politician being, you know, a kind of a ransomware, a, you know, blackmail or of some sort, saying like, hey, we're going to release all this information we know about all of your speeches and what you've been looking at, what you're interested in, and all these types of things you don't want the public to know necessarily. And they may not be illegal, but they could be embarrassing. And now you have, you know, you have leverage over someone that has an important job or has some degree of power. So that's, I guess, that's really where the the real threat and the fear of these types of things leaking. I don't know, Scott, what do you think something like that is a feasible use case for these thieves, or is there something even greater danger probably? Or
yeah, absolutely. And I think it's all the unknown. I mean, just to your point, thinking about, like, you know, maybe it's a politician or something, and a politician may not be looking to necessarily spread good cheer on some of their policy. They probably are more likely going to be looking at a chat GPT to look at something to throw at their opponent, look at some bad things they've done. What better way? I mean, you can go out and do a Google search and find a lot of history on things. With ChatGPT, you can itemize and say, give me the top 10 strongest things, you know, that I'm running against this politician that I could use against them, and da da da. And it spits back boom, 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 boom. And probably a lot of those things are things you never even knew. So it's really, it digs deeper. It provides more focused response when you do a query, and allows you to respond much better to whatever the situation is. So now imagine you have the ability and you see somebody's account is compromised, and now you can access it. Now you see what prior questions that they posed to ChatGPT, what kind of research they were doing, what are their likes, their hobbies. It gives you a well-rounded understanding of the person, but even to the point where you can really see their specific things that they queried. So it's like you said, it's more than just, hey, here's the website somebody browsed or a particular search they put into Google. It's even more granular. I mean, I think the more granular you get, the more you start to get inside someone's head and know secrets about them and truths about who they really are. And in the world of politics, that's probably the most important thing for people, because they love to do that. They love to get into someone else's head and find all their faults and use that to their advantage and put themselves up on a pedestal. So that's just one example. But you think about this, that over 100,000 people with compromised accounts. Now, maybe that's not huge in comparison to the 100 million plus users that are on ChatGPT. But then I was thinking about it, saying, you know what? It's only been around, really took off last November, December. It's not like it's been around that much more than a year. So all the login credentials for these 100,000 plus people that are compromised, they're all new, they're fresh. When something's new or fresh on an account in the dark web, they command top dollar. Stolen fresh credit cards, you can get two, three times the ask if you're selling stolen credit cards. Same thing here, these stolen credentials, as opposed to if you look back at one of the many T-Mobile breaches or Yahoo breaches, some of that data sometimes is 6 years old, 7 years old, 10 years old. The people have passed on, and, you know, they've changed accounts and providers and login credentials multiple times, whereas this is fresh. So this tells you this is something that's very valuable, I guess, for those that are compromising those accounts.
Mm. Yeah. And getting back to our example, just for a minute, we have a real world example I just thought of. Back a few months ago, there was a Republican commercial, and they claimed that it was the first campaign commercial ever written by AI. So you could imagine, you know, if they use ChatGPT or some other service, but it's very easy to imagine if they use ChatGPT, you know, we're just seeing the dirt they're trying to dig up on their opponents or on the party's, kind of goals and failures and all those things. You know, we just saw that in the 30-second spot. Imagine all the things that were surfaced and searched for that we didn't see. And that's what you would have access to if you breached the right person's account, for instance. Wow. So it just shows all the untapped, dirt in terms of and mudslinging that you see in politics. And that's just politics, you know. You get into business and more almost spying and, state actors, that type of thing. And you could see how it could become a treasure trove to actually gain access into someone, into the right person's ChatGPT account.
Yeah, definitely.
So we'll, you know, I've said it before and we'll keep saying it, these stories are going to keep popping up, especially with ChatGPT. It's not going anywhere too soon. So we're going to see more stories involving that. And hopefully we're not going to see too many stories about breaches, and because hopefully people get those passwords in check, make them strong and change them semi-regularly. If you don't have a regular change of that kind of stuff, you know, secure those accounts.
Yep. Kind of reminds me of, you remember when the internet first took off and you first heard about Google and you went on and you tried a search on Google and you were kind of like dumbfounded and say, wow, how did it know that? How did it do that so fast on the World Wide Web? And the world of the internet was all new back then, but it really stood out as a moment. I remember where I was sitting and when I first tried a search for Google, and it just blew me away. I kind of have that same feeling with ChatGPT. It's not like you try it once and you're done with it. I downloaded the app on my phone and I'd use it on my desktop, and I find I keep going back to it because I'm very curious about how well it works and how accurate it is and how amazing it is in just response time and depth of understanding and clarity in its writing. It's pretty powerful, and I could see it being used more and more as more people start to appreciate how valuable it is for good, hopefully. I mean, obviously the bad guys are going to be using it for wrongful purposes, but I'm looking forward to hearing some of the advanced things that it will be used for good in the coming months.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good countermeasures. Cybersecurity, I'm in the same boat. It's hard to talk about ChatGPT without people coming up with all the negatives about people losing their jobs and hackers hijacking artificial intelligence for nefarious purposes. But it's like everything else. It's just a tool. And so you give good people a tool and they're going to do good things with it. And those are the stories that I'm so anticipating. I haven't heard many of them, but you know, that doesn't sell on the news generally. So you got to kind of dig a little deeper for those, but they'll be popping up more and more, I'm sure.
Definitely. Yeah.
Let's see here. We can move on to our third and final story. Mm-hmm. Just one more quick reminder about dark kryptonite. You can stop ransomware, malware, and phishing attacks in their tracks, and eliminate cybercrime, fraud, and information warfare by utilizing advanced blockchain algorithms and their zero trust models. And you can learn all of that on darkkryptonite.com. We got this headline out of Security Week. TSMC says supplier after ransomware group claims attack on chip giant. TSMC has become a giant. They got my attention because they're the primary designers, I guess you could say, in partnership with Apple. They designed the series of chips that have been in iPhones for years and years. Mm-hmm. And Apple has moved their desktop chips to Apple Silicon, the M chip series. TSMC is behind that. I think they haven't yet, but they're poised to introduce the 3-nanometer chips, which will, greater efficiencies and a smaller mm-hmm. wafer and all that stuff, which is really exciting. Because you don't usually you make a processor go faster these days by either upping the chip speed or adding more cores, so you could do kind of parallel multiprocessing. But when you can actually shrink the die size down, you're now creating efficiencies of, like, I don't know, 25% increase while also using less power, which is always mm-hmm. exciting to me. And it's what keeps the tech industry kind of chugging away.
Sure.
But yeah, in this case, yeah.
I was going to say, what is it called? Is it Moore's Law, where it keeps getting faster, less power consumption? I think that also in turn generates less heat. You have much shorter traces for the information to travel. So that's a huge amount of speed increase. It is fascinating. It's funny you picked this story. I didn't tell you before we chatted, but this was actually one of the stories I reported on today for Cybercrime Radio. I do daily headlines and talk about things. And this one was one of the ones that was selected. So certainly keep an ear out for Cybercrime Radio, and you'll hear some of my highlights on it. But one thing in the research on the story, because TSMC is Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, and they're actually responsible for 65% of the world's semiconductors and 90% of the high-end chips. And that would be something to your point, talking about some of the more advanced things that Apple's doing and a couple other companies. It really, targeting a company like that is scary because it affects every one of us. In other words, the parts are pretty much in all of our phones. When they represent 65% of the world's semiconductors, that's a concern, that if they were, you know, taken out or whatever, or some of that information is truly held hostage. And I think that's specifically why we see a demand of $70 million. That's a little bit higher. Well, it's a lot higher than the typical ransomware payout is about $4 million from large companies. That's where it's ranging at right now in 2023. So $70 million is pretty steep. And I think just the fact a notorious ransomware gang, Lockbit, has been everywhere, and they're getting a lot of the headlines and causing a lot of havoc with companies. They may actually fetch this money. I don't know. It'd be interesting. And they're threatening to publish lots of things, not just login information, but password details, entry points, how they got into the network, samples of data. All kinds of dirt they've got that they say they're going to put out there. So they're serious about this. They really want this payout, a big payout, I guess. So I think the days to come, we're going to find out more fallout from this story. And this goes on top of already a crippled sector. The semiconductor sector, as you know, probably most of the listeners know, has really been crippled coming out of the pandemic 3+ years. Everybody was at home and everybody said, well, I need a new phone, or I need a new laptop and a smart TV. And electronics exploded because people had time on their hands. They weren't traveling as much, so they had some disposable income, and everybody went out and upgraded their electronics, which in turn, to some degree, between the pandemic, logistics problems, shipping challenges, and just a shortage on semiconductors, it changed the electronics industry, and we're still struggling to get parts. It used to be parts would be, you know, stocked to 3-4 weeks from a traditional company like an Arrow or somebody else that carries semiconductors. Now you're still seeing things where it's in excess of a year. So the supply demand curve got all messed up. The automotive sector got messed up. The electronics sector as a whole did. That all funnels down to even businesses like ours. So if there's any customers out there that are hearing this from Berkeley Veritronics, I apologize if our deliveries are a little late from time to time, but it all trickles back to companies like this, unfortunately. Then when I hear that they're being targeted with a ransomware attack, I say, oh no, it's going to make deliveries even worse. So scary. It affects everybody though at the end of the day.
Yeah. And back in 2018, there was a big production halt to the same company. It was a result of the WannaCry malware, and it caused havoc, just like you're talking about. You know, kind of like the precursor to the big chip shortage that we're kind of still going through, getting through slowly now.
Yeah.
So it, you know, I look back, and it wasn't clear, at least to me, if they paid any kind of ransom to get their production line back in order. But it was down for, I think, about a week, it caused major disruptions, and a lot of that was about the iPhone chips at the time that they were providing, and everyone was worried God forbid the new iPhones don't ship this year. It's like, you know, become some kind of, feels like a national holiday of sorts, you know, for consumers. It's like everyone waits and the press and everyone reports on it and stuff.
Oh,
and
sure.
But that's just one example. There's, you know, hundreds of big companies that rely on these types of chips. And then there's below them, there's thousands and thousands of companies that rely on those big companies. And so, like you said, when the big guys, you know, face a problem like this, everyone's affected, backs up. And in this case, this particular breach, I think it was a, it was one of their vendors, Taiwan-based KinMax technology. So it wasn't a direct breach on TSMC, but, you know, they have so many vendors, it's not surprising that one of their vendors will kind of throw a wrench in the works if they breached. And this particular vendor works with Cisco, HPE, Microsoft, Citrix, VMware, and NVIDIA. So some of those are, you know, big players, big US companies. And hopefully they won't see too many delays in their production plans as a result of this breach.
It looks like it may have some widespread impacts. We'll see how it plays out. But you're right. I guess it was their vendor or supplier that was breached. But it kind of stands out to me the importance of deciding who you partner with as a company. You can't just partner with everyone. You got to be somewhat selective. And I think that's where having good cyber hygiene within an organization, it's only as good as the cyber hygiene of your partners and other companies you deal with. So that's why I always encourage people to make sure you're very cautious. Don't just sign up with everybody. Make sure that you check that they have some best practices in place, especially if you firm up relationships and you're really dependent upon one another. And in this case, Taiwan Semiconductor, I'm sure there's hundreds of key suppliers that they are partnered with that are very strategic to their overall success. And it really affects global economies now and countries when companies this big get involved in things or are threatened to have major problems like this. And then there's also the impact of the intellectual property, what's stolen and what's copied. Companies like this, when they're shrinking technology and making advances, sometimes just to build a foundry might take the better part of 5 years to adopt to the reduction in semiconductors for a new line. That's a huge investment. We're not talking millions or hundreds of millions. We're talking billions of dollars in years. And that affects global economies like nobody realizes. It's just unbelievable impact. So anytime I hear a company like this that's even tied to something as a large of a ransomware, I kind of get a little nervous.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Big players deal with big problems, I guess. All right. That about does it for this episode. You got anything coming up you want to mention or plug? Or?
Yeah, well, I do want to certainly give a shout out to anybody that's attending the Black Hat Conference. That's going to be coming up in August. That's one of the coolest conferences that I usually go to. I've been there before, always have a great time, and get to meet a lot of great colleagues. It really spans the whole week. It technically goes from August 5th through August 10th. The two main days that I'll be there, August 9th and 10th, and I'm going to be working with Cybercrime Radio, and we're going to be doing live radio interviews for key people at the show floor, Black Hat. So I'm going to be running around different booths, different people. So really look forward to seeing you there. And if you have something special that you're launching or announcing your company, certainly reach out to me. Let me know. Hopefully we can connect up, and who knows, maybe you'll be on the live radio feed there for Cybercrime Radio. But always a great event, and really look forward to that in Vegas each year. So, you know, reach out to me or drop me a note on Twitter or through the website, scottshober.com, and be happy to connect up there and chat a little bit.
All right. Sounds great. Looking forward to Black Hat as always, yeah, every year. Want to quickly thank Dark Kryptonite once again for sponsoring this episode. You can learn all about them on darkkryptonite.com, and I think they updated their website recently. We might even be mentioned on there somewhere. So
It's beautiful. Stop by and take a look at it. They've got some great information. They're doing some exciting things, and I would encourage people to reach out and ask for a demo, because I think when you see a demo of some of the great stuff that they're doing, it's game changer type of technology. And I know that they've got some very interesting customers right now that have been given fabulous feedback. So I encourage you, take a demo of it, reach out, request a demo right on their website, and take a look through some of the stuff there, and get some great videos up and other information that's starting to fill out their website.
All right. This podcast is available on YouTube, Spotify, Google, iHeart, Apple, Amazon, and more. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and review. We'd like to hear from our listeners. Questions or comments, whatever you got. You can reach us best on Twitter at ScottBBS, or just visit the website, scottshober.com, for more info. We read your question or comment on this podcast. We'll send you a signed copy of one of our books. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time for another new episode packed with news and tips. Stay safe from the West Coast in Costa Rica. This is Craig signing out.
All right. And this is Scott here from the East Coast signing out. Stay safe, everybody.
Coast to coast. With your hosts, Scott and Craig Shover.